Thursday is the day we read from your letters. Linda Wertheimer's story about twins prompted many to write. This is from Bob Bailey of Hot Springs, Arkansas.
Multiple sets of twins, a new thing? My first wife and I had our first set in 1960, our second set in 1962, and our third set in 1969. Memorable? Yes, but also memorable was the fact that we bought twin insurance from Sears for a penny. Everything we bought from Sears, and we bought everything we needed, was duplicated by Sears, and the cost for the duplicates was the sum of one penny. We got an extra high chair, bassinet, crib, bedding, clothes, diapers, baby chest of drawers, you name it, we got it, and we did this twice. Mr. Bailey concludes, maybe this is why Sears is in trouble today, too generous to twins.
And Cynthia Schubert of Portland, Oregon wrote this, I never thought that hearing a radio story from two tired parents while two chattering three-year-olds and two squalling infants filled the room with noise would make me smile. But the wonderful segment from John and Allison Hockenberry and their four children did just that. Thank you for allowing us a little glimpse into the Hockenberry household and the joys of raising twins. I still miss John Hockenberry on NPR. Thanks for bringing him back even for just a few minutes.
Dr. David Watts read a commentary here about telling patients they have cancer, and that led Dr. Jeffrey Bishop to write to us. He's an MD and an assistant professor in the Ethics in Science and Medicine program at the University of Texas Medical School in Dallas.
Dr. Bishop writes, thanks for the wonderful piece by Dr. David Watts. He captures what many, probably most physicians have felt when facing a patient with a terminal diagnosis. Delivering bad news, like most things in medicine, cannot be taught so easily. Like riding a bicycle, one learns how to do it by doing it. You really do not know what you will say until you have seen your patient's face and body language. For whatever reason, we docs have been taught that our emotions cannot enter into the situation, as if we might be biased because we are human. How ludicrous! We shoulder a tremendous burden because we have been socialized into thinking we must be that way. There are so few places to unburden ourselves. Dr. Watts's piece lightened my load, if only briefly.
And Martha Ellen Smith wrote this about the same commentary. I would just like to know why a doctor thinks that all patients are going to wither and die before their time just because they're told the truth. He would rather hold out hope without really the possibility of recovery. He is condemning his patient to the hell of chemotherapy and unnecessary surgery and depriving him of his right to die with dignity. Perhaps the man would prefer to know how much time he has, to put his life in order, to take care of his family, to prepare. I know that too often doctors act as small gods, thinking they know best. Sometimes they don't.
Ms. Smith adds, as for my credentials, in the last 3 years I have watched two parents and a sister-in-law die of cancer, all of them in their homes with the full knowledge of what was coming. None of them flinched or withered. It was difficult to watch, but there was beauty in their courage. People can be trusted with the truth.
Wade Goodwin's report about a mosquito surveillance officer in Houston brought out the science police in the audience. Dr. Victor Sloan of Scotch Plains, New Jersey, writes this.
In Wade Goodwin's excellent story on Houston's mosquito hunters, he said, when the dry ice melts, melting is the act of a solid becoming liquid. Dry ice does not melt, it sublimes. That is, it goes directly from a solid to a gas without ever becoming liquid. When I was about 10, my father tried to explain this to me. It took me years to believe him.
Well, if we have wrongly shaken your faith in what your father told you, or if you have any comment to make about what you hear, write to us at Letters, All Things Considered, 635 Massachusetts Avenue Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20001. Our email address is atc@npr.org. And either way, please tell us where you're writing from and how you pronounce your name.